This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Tonight, I am announcing Canada will be responding to the U.S. trade action with 25% tariffs against $155 billion worth of American goods. This will include immediate tariffs on $30 billion worth of goods as of Tuesday, followed by further tariffs on $125 billion worth of American products in 21 days' time to allow Canadian companies and supply chains to seek to find alternatives.
Welcome back to the Law Bites podcast. I'm recording this on Sunday, February the 2nd. My initial plan had been to discuss what comes next for digital policy in Canada, following on last week's episode that made the case that an era on Canadian digital policy had effectively come to an end, with bills dead to prorogation and legislation that had already been passed facing pressure due to the arrival of the Trump administration. In light of events over the past few days, however, that episode's going to have to wait. Instead, Canada now finds itself in what amounts to an economic war with the United States, as President Trump has levied a 25% tariff on all Canadian goods. There's a 10% tariff on energy, all of which starts on Tuesday. In response, Canada has announced that it will levy retaliatory tariffs that are valued at $155 billion, $30 billion this week, and another $125 billion in a month's time. In my view, it is seemingly impossible to make sense of this deliberate targeting of an ally and claims that this is somehow linked to fentanyl that crosses the Canadian border into the United States just doesn't add up. These moves are going to make everyone poorer, but seems likely to hit Canada particularly hard if the tariffs extend for a significant period of time. Now, should this escalate, the prospect of additional measures seem possible, and that's where digital policy may come in. I have some ideas on the role that digital policy can play should this escalate, and I'm going to devote this episode to walking through some of them. I need to start, though, with a couple of caveats. First, the goal of retaliatory tariffs or measures are designed to create additional costs in the United States in the hope that U.S. domestic pressure might bring this to an end. Now, that's harder in a digital policy context where Canadians may ultimately pay the costs of some measures. We've seen that play out before, and I think it's fair to say that the consumer costs have too often been ignored by the Canadian government. Take, for example, Bill C-11, where the additional fees that are going to be required to be paid by the various streaming companies. It's on hold right now due to court challenges, but the vision, at least of the government and by the CRTC, is millions of dollars to be paid by streaming companies in support of the production of Canadian content. Many of those costs are ultimately passed on to consumers, but that really never entered into the conversation. The same is true for the digital services tax, the DST. Where at least two of the larger U.S. companies, Google and Amazon, have made moves to ensure that much of those costs are passed along largely to businesses who are the ones who advertise or make use of those platforms and will ultimately be paying higher fees. So it isn't the platforms that necessarily pay, it is consumers or businesses. That "make web giants pay" slogan that the government was very fond of was always an exaggeration. As indeed it is Canadians, whether it's consumers or businesses, who ultimately do much of the paying. And so measures that double down on those kinds of policies might actually make matters worse at a time when there are real concerns about affordability and the kinds of costs that may come as a result of these tariffs. Second, we need to be smart when it comes to these measures. In some ways, that's, of course, stating the obvious, but I have to say that just prior to the holidays, I had a discussion with government officials on some of the challenges that they're facing with misinformation and disinformation, particularly with respect to the prospect of a future election. I have to say that conversation was surprising. Officials admitted that there were real problems created effectively by heritage in burning bridges with some of the tech companies. They'd now reached the point where they needed their help on this issue around misinformation and disinformation, and the relationship with many of them was simply terrible. Now, that's not to say that we can't take smart regulatory approaches with respect to these companies and ensure that they pay their fair share, only to note that we have seen by experience that they are often not bluffing when they say that there are red lines that they have in terms of the kinds of policies they're comfortable with and those that they're going to actively oppose. And we have to consider some of the other implications of taking them on in a way that when we need their assistance, they may be unwilling to provide support. Thirdly, I think the measures that we might take should be viewed as both offensive and defensive. Offensive measures would be designed to increase those U.S. costs while leaving Canada relatively unscathed, while defensive measures might be used to negotiate a settlement, improve our hand, so to speak, and allow for measures to be traded off in order to achieve a settlement. So what might we do? Let's actually start with the defensive measures, because we already have policies in place that run into the billions of dollars. Movement on that front might give Trump some wins, and some of those measures may anyway be repealed by a change in government, or I think it's fair to say haven't worked out as intended. Take, for example, Bill C-11, that online streaming bill that, at least for the moment, hasn't generated any new revenue, and with the challenges in the courts, it may take many months or even longer for it to do so. There's a couple of possibilities here. We could offer to repeal the legislation, and that's frankly precisely what the Conservatives say they're open to doing if they're elected in a future election. That would actually take that money off the table, to be sure, but it would certainly be viewed as a win, and it's been the subject of much lobbying within the United States by some of those companies that are directly affected. If we feel that repeal goes too far, the government could consider putting on the table the prospect of expanding eligibility to better ensure that a wider range of companies and producers, including foreign-based producers, such as those from the United States, are eligible to make use of some of the funds that are generated through this legislation. This has been a hotly contested issue, including questions around definitions for what it means to count as Canadian content. There is a fairness element, certainly, in terms of saying that if you pay in, you should be entitled to benefit from some of those kinds of payments. But that might be one mechanism to give Trump a win and, in some ways, put some of the money back into the pockets of companies that are actually investing in Canada. There's a similar story, I think, to be had with respect to Bill C-18, the Online News Act. We could offer to repeal that legislation as well. There has also been lobbying on that front. Google, for example, raised specifically that legislation with the U.S. Trade Representative, which represents the United States on trade-related negotiations. That would have the effect potentially of bringing news links back to the Meta platforms, Facebook and Instagram, and it would give Trump a win in terms of a repeal. The digital services tax, or the DST, is somewhat more complicated. There is certainly far more money at stake, potentially billions that are on the table. But we know, based on some of the executive orders from President Trump, that this is likely to be one of his key issues with respect to Canada and is likely to spark some form of retaliation if we go ahead with this. Now, if that were to actually happen, it would mean that the billions that we generate here could well be offset through the retaliatory measures that we face. Taking that off the table would hurt. It would mean that the government, which had counted on that money for budgetary purposes, wouldn't see it. But to the extent to which we may be forced to back down on it anyway, doing so early gives Trump a win and perhaps helps make the case that some of these other damaging tariffs get taken off the board as well. So there are a number of issues that we can put in the window that would give Trump a win. They're worth real money, billions of dollars, but we are somewhat likely to move on those issues anyway. And doing so sooner rather than later comes with the added benefit that we effectively get some sort of credit, or we would hope we would get some sort of credit for having done so as part of a negotiation to try to bring this current dispute around tariffs to an end. Now, if those are some of the defensive measures, what of some of the offensive moves that we could take? Some of the things that are a bit more aggressive, to be sure, but touch on digital policy and have the potential to have some impact. Now, first, Canada has a strategy with respect to critical minerals. And we've, of course, got significant supply of some of those minerals, which are actively used for some of the very technologies that sit at the heart of any digital strategy. Thinking of drones and satellites, smartphones and laptops, data centers and mobile networks, all dependent on some of these minerals, of which Canada has some significant supply. We've got the ability to use that in a number of different ways. We could think about potential tariffs or export controls on some of those minerals, raising the costs for some of those US-based companies. There's pain there that's felt by everyone, but it sends the message that there is a need and a reliance on Canadian resources. We could think more seriously about developing industries here that do more than just mine these minerals, but actually make use of these minerals so that we can compete more effectively, not just in North America, but on a global stage. We could be thinking, secondly, about data, privacy in particular. Now, there are any number of countries around the world that have established data localization requirements that require that the data be stored, consumer data, personal information be stored locally. Other jurisdictions, including the European Union, have established restrictions on data transfers. Now, those come with some potential costs. We've got a truly integrated network, and very often we see data moving across borders. But if there is going to be these tensions between our two countries, there may be increasing concerns about how our personal data may be used. And I think a growing call amongst many Canadians for stronger protections, some of which may come about by mandating that personal information of Canadians be stored within Canada. We could think of moving forward with more aggressive rules at a governmental level with respect to procurement for cloud services. The government has already established certain requirements with respect to the use of cloud services and requirements that they be situated within Canada. We could seek to expand some of that, increasing investment in Canada, or really seek to develop a stronger cloud-based industry here in Canada. And so there are some potential benefits for Canadians in the form of better privacy or de-risking the misuse of Canadian information, and at the same time, having some real impact on the costs that are borne, particularly by some U.S. entities and even more, running counter to what has been longstanding U.S. policy, where they've sought to encourage free flow of data, at least in part, to benefit economically in terms of the development of significant cloud infrastructures. Now, there are also some things that we could be thinking about from an intellectual property perspective. Professor Richard Gold from McGill University recently wrote a piece in the Globe and Mail, I'll link to it in the show notes, that focused on measures that Canada could be considering when it comes to patents. He notes, and I'll quote, that under the World Trade Organization and Section 19 of Canada's Patent Act, Canada can circumvent U.S.-controlled patents, freeing up Canadian companies to make patented drugs, as well as develop AI-based inventions and other key technologies to sell predominantly in Canada, but also around the world. Now, this comes, of course, with some amount of risk. Anytime you start moving to circumvent patents, that's going to have implications for companies, not just in the United States, but elsewhere, to think about what Canada's IP system looks like. But our policies and our laws have envisioned the possibility of doing this, and quite clearly targeting innovative sectors, including the pharmaceutical sector and the AI sector, would certainly capture U.S. attention. We could also think about changes with respect to copyright. Canada, in the last USMCA or CUSMA, extended the term of copyright from the global standard of life of the author plus 50 years, which is what had been in Canada, to life of the author plus 70 years, adding an additional 20 years. That was coming largely due to U.S. pressure, which had been there for the better part of a couple of decades, but Canada had continuously resisted it. Now, Canada finds itself, due to this term extension, in a period of 2 decades where no new works will enter into the public domain. It would undoubtedly be difficult to move back to life plus 50, and we'd face some real pressure if we tried to do that. But we had always carved out for ourselves the ability to extend the term of copyright in our own way. So rather than the U.S. approach of simply making it life plus 70 years, there was the possibility in Canada of making it life plus 50 plus the possibility of an additional 20 years as part of a registration requirement. Now, that additional 20 years that would be available to anyone with a simple registration would comply with international standards. It would comply with our trade obligations under our deal with the United States, but it would have the effect, I think, of better preserving the public domain in Canada, providing an example not just in Canada, but around the world for those thinking about term extension, about a way to do that, but at the same time limit the harm that's created to the public domain. That's still available to Canada. We could still consider requiring that registration requirement. It's a strong message for the rest of the world and would have a positive effect on Canadian copyright law without creating significant harms to Canadian creators. We could also think about changing our so-called de minimis exemption as part of our customs rules. That's the rules that allow for a certain amount of goods to be imported by Canadians without any additional duties. Now, there has been long-standing pressure, especially from some of the larger U.S. platforms, to increase our de minimis exemption. If you do so, it makes it easier for foreign sellers to sell some of those goods and some of those smaller packages and have them cross into the border without any additional taxes. There's always been a bit of a tension with respect to those policies. You know, the net effect of increasing the de minimis exemption may well be to transfer some of the purchases that Canadians make from local retailers to foreign retailers, as they're able to purchase online without facing any potential taxes, whereas if they purchase it locally, there is likely to be taxes that are applicable. Now, at a time when there has been an increased focus on buying Canadian, making a move not only to not increase the de minimis exemption, but actually reduce it such that online purchases from foreign sellers would become effectively more expensive because we would see the addition of taxes as part of that, isn't something that necessarily would be all that popular with Canadians, of course. Those that are purchasing from foreign sellers will find that there is now additional taxes applicable. But at a time when we are focused on buying Canadian, finding ways to ensure that it is more likely that people will buy Canadian, not disadvantaging Canadian sellers by having a high de minimis threshold for customs purposes, makes a whole lot of sense. Now, we could also think about longer term strategies, limiting support on AI and some of the other areas to ensure that they are Canadian based firms and that there are rules in place to ensure that the intellectual property and some of the other value that is generated coming out of some of that investment remains in the country. Many would argue that we ought to be doing that with or without the current tariff crisis that we have from the United States. And we also need to be thinking about longer term strategies on digital trade. Many of the trade agreements Canada has entered into around digital trade have followed a U.S. model. Of course, that's true with respect certainly to the USMCA and CUSMA. It was even true with respect to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, as the U.S. played a key role in shaping that agreement, even though they ultimately left the agreement once Trump took over in his first term as president. There are, however, now alternative agreements that are out there where the U.S. does not play a significant role and where the kinds of rules that are being established are less U.S.-centric and offer Canada the ability to help build a foundation of global policy around digital and e-commerce that is more reflective of global concerns. I'm thinking here in particular of the DEPA, the Digital Economy Partnership Agreement, which started with Chile, New Zealand, and Singapore, added South Korea as a fourth member last year, and Canada should certainly be thinking actively about joining, as it touches on a wide range of digital policy issues that are simply not found in the agreements that we typically have where the U.S. has been a core partner. Similarly, there is the AfCFTA, which is an Africa agreement that now will include a digital trade protocol that mirrors many of the kinds of issues found in the DEPA and takes a much more expansive view on how digital policies might be put into effect within a digital trade agreement. And so there are options to make Canada somewhat less reliant when it comes to the U.S. around some of these issues. These are the sorts of things that aren't going to happen overnight, But given the kinds of harms that have arisen, given our reliance on the U.S., not just in terms of trade, but even in terms of some of our digital policies, I think the time has come to think bigger. Bigger in terms of how digital policies can play a role in trying to address the current issues around tariffs, and more broadly, how Canada positions itself when it comes to these policies. That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at LawBitesPod or follow Michael Geist at MGeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening and see you next time.